A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's ready to let his geek flag fly, Rob Cicerino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our post-finale wrap-up special to talk about everything from Survivor Go Wrong and its finale and its wacky reunion show. And here with me to talk about it all is a man who I talk to every single week on the podcast, who was in attendance for the Survivor finale and reunion show, and who covered the final four with many interviews for Parade.com, the great Josh Wiggler.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle.
No. Okay, we don't need the full intro.
We don't need that. You can cut that.
Yeah.
We're good. We're good without that. That's for a different podcast. Hello, Rob. How are you?
Good. I also wanted to say in the intro that we are two men who don't talk about men stuff.
No, that's not really our game here.
Yeah. Ty would feel very at home.
Yeah, I think Ty could hang with us. We talk about, I don't know, Child's Play, the movie. We have an entire podcast devoted
Chucky
to the series. Yeah, we're right. Big Chucky guys. Love Chucky.
All right,
How would Chucky do on Survivor? I feel like not great.
The doll?
Yeah.
Well, I think he's probably at a disadvantage in a lot of the challenges at being like 2 feet tall.
Yeah. I mean, they would build down the sets for his, you know, proportions, right? Don't they tend to do that? Like if there's like a balancing thing and like you have to balance a pot on your head and attach it to the top of a rig, like they would have just like a 3 foot tall rig for Chucky.
You know what? Let's not open up the post finale podcast with like 10 minutes of exploring how the doll from Child's Play, how Survivor, they have to change the rules for him.
Yeah, the real Brad Dourif fans are really happy about this, but we can move on. I'm good with that.
All right. Well, we have a lot to talk through because it's the day after the big Survivor finale. We have a new Survivor winner, and that is Michelle.
Bro, I know.
Yeah, Gerald Fitz.
So we have a lot to talk through. Of course, you were at the finale. We were together at the post-show. What would you call that? The post-finale soiree?
Yeah, post-show after-party recaps.
So a very fun night all the way around, of course. And Josh has his exit press up on parade.com, which you can go to at robiswebsite.com/parade for the short link to Josh's parade.com author archive.
Yeah, I just spent the past 4 hours transcribing, writing up all those interviews. So all four of them with the four finalists, that's all up. I know your exit interviews are up as well. Rob, what were your takeaways from getting to talk with the finalists?
So I talked to the final three. Sydney, of course, was not doing any press today. She was flying out.
I have like the rare Sydney interview.
Yeah, not a lot of people got it last night.
Yeah, I got a Sydney interview and I feel very special. And when I shook hands with Sydney, the first thing she said was, "You have very soft hands."
Yeah. Always what you want to hear.
This is becoming a legendary fact about me, as my soft hands are becoming known.
Although, ironically, I feel like you had the same comment in reverse about one of the Game of Thrones cast members when we were at the Game of Thrones after party.
Yeah, not pointing fingers at Samwell Tarly.
I was going to say it was a blind item.
Well, that would be Macy Williams.
Yeah. All right. So in terms of the exit interviews that I did, I actually thought Michelle did a really good job. I thought she was very good. I really liked that. I thought she was very deferential. And I thought she was also very gracious, as Steven had pointed out on Twitter, in terms of complimenting Aubrey and Ty on the games that they were playing. So I think that she did a really good job there. I think it would be a bad look for her to really sort of like pound the table and say, "Hey, I deserve to win, and
Aubrey and Ty were bad. Like, she didn't come out and attack anybody in terms of, like, defending what she did, even though there's a lot of people out there, I'm sure, that she's read a lot of people saying, you know, Aubrey should be the winner. So I thought she handled everything really with a lot of grace. And I think it was a good reflection on the social game, which we've heard a lot about over the last 18 hours.
Yeah, I think that would have been really bad social strategy to say, like, Aubrey sucks, Ty is the worst, I'm the best. Like, it does not behoove Michelle to come out swinging like that. And I don't think she feels that way anyway. And, you know, for me, I am an Aubrey supporter. I really would have liked to have seen Aubrey win, but I totally get why Michelle wins that jury. And I think it's nothing to take away from the game that Michelle played. And I think that her making the rounds, and in my interview with her as well, and in yours, she gave a great interview with Gordon Holmes as well. I think that she's been really articulate about how she played, what she did. Sounds like there were a few things that we did not get to see on the show. Again, Steven will tell you exit interviews are not canon, but if some of that stuff was true, I would have liked to have seen included. But overall, just the way that she's talking about her game in the exit press makes me feel even better about her as a winner.
Was there something in particular that you're referencing?
Well, she talked to me about how she was really the architect of the Julia vote. That she, you know, she left that tribal council where Scott gets taken out and she was not included in there. And the reason she's not included is because she's too close to Julia and Aubrey doesn't trust Julia. And Michelle's answer to that is to go to Aubrey and Sydney and say, if this is an issue, let's just cut out Julia and do this thing together on our own. And that ends up being the driving force behind the Julia vote, according to Michelle. And if that's the case, that really is very strong stuff in my book. And it's certainly, you know, they make a meal out of it on the show in terms of Michelle having emotional difficulty voting out Julia. But in terms of being the person who's really building toward that moment and being the cheerleader behind let's get rid of Julia, that doesn't really come across.
No, and to that, I feel like it's almost the opposite, where I feel like in that episode, going back to, I think that's at the final seven, where it seems as though Jason and Julia are trying to pull in Sydney.
Yeah.
And they're trying to pitch Sydney on this. And I get the impression from the episode that if Sydney is willing to keep Julia on board, it seems like Michelle is also willing to go in that direction because of how conflicted she ultimately is. It doesn't seem like in the episode, Michelle's the driving force of, hey, let's get rid of Julia in that spot.
Totally. Yeah. So it doesn't come that way on the show. Came across that way in our chat. I just like the way that she's carrying herself today. And I said this, you know, I've said this all along in the Wiggle Room podcast that you and I do, that I think that, you know, the way that Michelle plays, you know, it's a quiet social game. It's not about big moves. It's not about huge blindsides. It's about keeping people happy and keeping people liking you. And I don't think that that's really flashy TV stuff. And I think that she's aware of that as well. But that doesn't mean it's not an adequate way to win this game. In fact, it might be arguably one of the best ways to win the game. So I have no problem with it. I think that, you know, she played the way that she plays. She played in a way that works for Michelle Fitzgerald, and it worked out really well for her.
Is there anything you want to talk about anecdotally from your experiences last night?
Well, I thought that I was going to die when Sia showed up.
Okay. Well, let's get into that. Okay, so you're at the show.
Yeah.
And, okay, so first off, let's get to Sia. Let's build to that.
Yeah.
So what's the vibe like in the room for the live finale?
Well, the vibe was great. It was really fun. I got to bring Kevin Mahadeo, who some of you guys know if you listen to post-show recaps. He's my co-host on the Daredevil podcast, a lot of the nerdy stuff that we do. I got to bring him and his girlfriend along to the finale. So it was really cool to see their first takes on the finale. Lots of survivors in the house. Bob Crowley in the building, always a pleasure. Fellow Gabon veteran Corinne Kaplan was also in the house hanging out with Max Dawson, sitting with the Kyle Jason family. I saw Cochran there. I think you all saw Cochran there during the Aubrey segment. So there was a bunch of survivor people there. Everyone was really excited. There were some moments throughout where people were really, really pumped up. The fire-making one, for example. It seemed like the majority of the room was Team Aubrey throughout the whole episode. And during the fire-making challenge especially, there was a lot of energy in the room. A lot of people really on the edge of their seats when Aubrey's fire looks like it's roaring and roaring and roaring and going. She's about to win it, and then it breaks down, and just like this really palpable gasp of terror in the room. And then when she wins, it was a big, exciting moment as well. And then I think everyone felt really awful about how pro Aubrey they were when Sydney's mom came out and she was like the most wonderful woman ever. It was like, oh, sorry, we just rooted against your daughter.
That moment when Sydney was talking about, yeah, I just wanted to, you know, change my mom's life and, you know, give her health insurance. I'm sure that really like, oh, I don't feel as good about rooting for Aubrey to win this challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's a little uncomfortable, but what are you going to do? But it was fun. I mean, it's always fun in the room. It's always a good time. It was really interesting to live through the jury twist in front of, you know, a really packed audience of people who are engaged with and interested in Survivor, because that comes along and I'm not sure what to make of this thing in the moment. But the room was really, really exhilarated by it.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you were to take that as just, like, the pure sample of how did Survivor fandom react to the jury twist, I would walk away saying it was, like, a 95% success rate. But I think then if you scan the internet, it's probably that number's going to drop.
Yeah, but I feel like the people that really were, it was a vocal minority on the internet. I think the people that were really upset about it took to the internet. And I think that most people were probably just like, okay, let's see how this goes. I mean, I don't think it was the end of the world.
I don't think it was the end of the world either. You know, I'm still kind of meditating on that whole thing. But it, you know, the moment it produced with Neil was incredible. Just, you know, good for Neil. I mean, now I get it. You know, now I understand Neil's insistence that he needs a second chance, because that poor guy, you know, getting pulled from the game and also getting pulled from the jury is just brutal. If they do have a second chance, they ought to just put that man's name on the ballot, because that guy really got boned pretty hard.
Okay, if you say so.
All right.
So let's get to talking about in the reunion show that they bring the survivors out on stage. They count the votes. Michelle win. It looked like, you know, certainly Michelle's family was going nuts. And that might have been one of the biggest celebrations I've seen from the family on one of these Survivor reunion shows. What
How
about
did
in the
that
room
look on TV? Because I didn't get to see the episode on TV yet, so like I don't know how that angle was. Probst completely lost in the sea of Fitzgeralds.
Yeah, it was like a big like huddle of people.
I was wondering about that. It's like kind of obscuring the shot right
like,
now.
Seemingly, Michelle had like 30 guests there at the finale.
Her entourage.
But the room, how did they react to Michelle versus Aubrey?
You know, to be honest, like, I'm not really sure what the, you know, I wasn't paying attention to the reaction in the room because I was really surprised by the outcome. And I think it was sort of like a mounting realization that Michelle was going to win based on the way that the final tribal council was playing out. Going into that final tribal council, you know, I looked around at my friends that I was with and other people, and I just like started trying to like put together the numbers of like who's going to vote for who. And I thought that Aubrey going into tribal council had the jurors on her side to win. And clearly as that tribal is going on, it's like, I don't think so. Like that Scott moment is the real turn. So for me, I was kind of mentally in a place of being like, oh no, the truthers were right. And sort of starting to come to grips with the fact that there was probably going to be a lot of gloating that I couldn't see online at that moment in time. So I was really lost in the headspace of that. So whatever sort of big reaction there was to Michelle's victory, I didn't pay much attention to.
You know, that's the one thing that really bums me out with this, is that I feel like that there's a lot of people who are annoyed with the Michelle truthers who ultimately did have this right.
Totally.
I'm not an edgic denier that doesn't exist. I feel like that, I don't know if we have 100% certainty. I think it's a little bit like forecasting the weather, that sometimes you predict a snowstorm and it snows and other times maybe not. But that being said, I feel like that there are a lot of people who are annoyed with the truthers.
Right.
And I feel like that some of that has transferred to Michelle winning being the thing that people are annoyed about. And yes, it's just, so I feel like that Michelle kind of got a raw deal in these two things. Of one, you have Aubrey, who's there, who a lot of people were rooting for to win, and people really fell in love with that character over the course of the season. And I can certainly understand, but that's not Michelle's fault that she was up against somebody who was this character. It's not like Michelle ran an aggressive attack ad against her and really like played dirty to beat Aubrey. The jury voted for her. So I think that that's one of the things that she's sort of getting hit with. And then two is the whole winner edit thing, where people are annoyed that that happened as well. and sort of like are, you know, extra salty about Michelle winning when that wasn't her fault either.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunate. Because I mean, I'm definitely not salty at Michelle. I am a little salty about the truthiness, which turns out to
be. But that wasn't her.
It's not her. It's not her. I'm not saying that. And I think that, you know, the point that I would make about the Michelle trutherism, you know, that movement that happened is like, great, congratulations. You got it right. You have proven that your magical edgic abilities have power. They're, you know, it has weight. It is not hollow. It does stay. Could you please keep it down next season? Could you keep it down? I really don't want to hear that stuff so early on so much if you start seeing that again. I don't know how it happens. And I don't know if it's possible. But there's so much edit talk in Survivor commentary right now. And I just think it has to chill out a little bit. I think this season is a little bit of a breaking point on that for me. I don't know how you feel about that, Rob.
Yeah, I do think that there is a bit of a backlash about it. And I think that hopefully, you know, the good that comes out of it is sort of maybe more, hey, this is, you know, this is specifically edit talk. Go there if you want to. I mean, it used to be, you know, back in my day, like it was just like there was a forum on Survivor Sucks that talked about this. And right. Then outside of that, like if you didn't go there, you weren't getting that sort of information. Now, everything, you know, we all swim in the same pool here and everything is so homogenized between all these different places that I just don't think that there's a way to keep that genie in the bottle.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't know, like there's definitely lots of great places to discuss that stuff. And there's lots of great podcasts that talk about that stuff. And that's fine. It's just not how I love to view the show. It's not my favorite way of looking at the show, and I've certainly talked about it too. So I'm guilty of it as well. It's a complicated thing right now. And I'm really glad that the season is over, that we have about 4 months before the next season of Survivor begins. And I just really hope that we can all kind of take a bit of a breath and just like take a step back and look at how, you know, Survivor is being talked about right now. And maybe think about, are there improvements in certain arenas? Are there things that we can talk about a little bit more and things we can talk about a little bit less?
All right, let's talk about the big moment from the night where we have, okay, we're talking with Ty, and then here comes the hit recording artist, Sia, from the audience. It was so crazy from watching from TV, because it's just like, okay, what is somebody walking up on the stage to do harm to somebody?
Yes.
And is there a heckler? Is it Eliza? What's happening right now?
It was horrifying. I was deeply, deeply troubled by this. Because, you know, everything, it's really long. It's really drawn out. She calls for Jeff. Jeff does not have an immediate response to what's going on beyond sort of like, oh, no. And then she's like kind of like slowly edging her way out of the row and into the aisle and putting her Sia hat on. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see her until she had the Sia hat on. I didn't see her sans Sia hat until she said, see you later.
That's why she does it. So you can't see her.
Yeah, I guess. But she's sort of like slowly walking forward towards Jeff, and like until Jeff starts saying like, oh, I know what this is, I know who this is, I started freaking out, like, is something awful about to happen right now? And I mean, arguably something awful, dude.
Yes.
But I mean, someone about to get seriously hurt. And in my mind the whole time, it's like, it's not only like this thing that I'm about to witness, but like, it's live television. Everybody's about to see this. Yes. Yeah. It was horrifying. I could not recover from it. You know, the whole awkwardness of the segment, I was just shaking back and forth for the next 20 minutes. It was awful.
Oh my God.
It was brutal. It was really, really, really terrible. Bone chilling.
And so then there's the, and the room is pumped up about this?
I mean, eventually, you know, once we found out that she was giving Ty $50,000 and then another $50,000 to his charity of choice instead of giving him, I don't know, like a bomb or something horrible, I think once we realized that this thing had a happy ending, I think people were pumped up.
Yeah.
In the lead up to it, I think there's a lot of stunned responses to what was going
also
on.
Kind of a bummer for Keith Nail that she mentions that she thought about doing this last season, but Sia said she was too chicken. She yes. said, excuse my pun.
Great pun.
So I didn't do it then. Keith Nail is like, oh, hell. Let me just stay in my house.
No, if I'm Keith Nail, like, now is the time to get back on the trail. Like, now you need to, like, find Sia. Yeah,
stick to the plan,
yeah. You got to find Sia. Finding Sia. I think that has to be the next move for Keith. I feel like if someone finds a way to connect Sia and Keith, I think we can get Keith Nail 50K.
Yeah, wow.
Boy, feels like we'll be able to do that.
Yeah, Keith Nail is just like, well... You said you were going to give me the money. Yeah. So yeah. I checked out Keith Nail's Twitter today. So sure. All Keith Nail did is he retweeted a couple of tweets. He retweeted.
Playing it cool. I like it.
He retweeted what Jamie knows. Can at Survivor Keith get that 50K from Sia for being last season's fan favorite? And then also, this is from Jimaby. Said, I hope Sia ponies up in awards at Survivor Keith some retroactive cash.
All right, so the movement is starting, and I think that the rest of us, now it behooves us to keep it moving.
I think that if Keith Nail came to Rob Has a PR Firm and said, like, hey, Rob, can you help me get this 50K? All right, here's what we're doing. We're going photo shoot with chickens today, and we are getting Keith Nail with two chickens.
Okay,
and let's put Sia like headgear on the chickens, and then send them to Sia, and it's like hey, look what I'm doing, look what I'm doing over here.
I bet you could find birds that look like Sia. Like I think that like you don't even need to have the Sia hat. There are probably birds out there that just their plumage looks like the Sia hat.
Like, yeah, I think he can kind of shame her into that $50,000 if he wanted to play that card.
Yeah, he might be able to puff up the amount, in fact. We might be able to pump up that number a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what else was really uncomfortable was how she talked about, like, well, you guys used to do the Sprint fan favorite thing.
Yeah, now you don't do it anymore.
But I don't know why you do it anymore. It's just like you could tell her, like, oh, she said Sprint.
And then when they went right from Sia to Drew Carey, was the room starting to get, like, were people starting to stir a little bit, or Drew Carey held the audience's attention?
No, I think Drew held the audience's attention. In my mind, it was like, I don't think we've broken the commercial yet. It feels like we've been on television.
Wow, you had the clock running in your head.
Yeah. For me, I was thinking, like, we have to have been on for, like, 20 straight minutes at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, this is running really long. Yeah, I think, you know, the Drew thing was fine, but then it was kind of undercut when, you know, Jeff runs back to the stage. And Jeff, understandably flustered by what's just happened, being like, I don't know if I should have thrown a commercial or if I should have talked to Drew. I don't really know what's happening right now. Yeah. So it just felt like, in the moment, it felt like I was witnessing by far and away the most bonkers reunion moment that I think has ever been recorded in Survivor reunion history. I think this has to be first place.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering, maybe it's an off-season podcast of ranking the most absurd moments from the Survivor finales or non-Survivor player appearances,
right,
in Survivor finales.
Yeah.
Whether you want to get into, like, Terry Bradshaw, if you want to get into... Tyler Perry, Sia, Mayim Bialik.
Or like the very subtle, random Adam Scott shout out in, I think it's Redemption Island, where he's just in the crowd, wordlessly hanging out.
Fist pumping?
Yeah, that would be me.
By the way, did you happen to read Dalton Ross's interview with Jeff today?
I have not. I have not come up for air from doing my interviews. What did he say to Dalton?
Dalton Ross had the backstory with Jeff about all of this stuff. And so, like, there's a bunch of absurd things in there. Just to give you the really quick version, you should, you know, go read Dalton's report on EW.com for the full story. So here's how this all works. So Sia is friends with Cochran. Sia reached out to Cochran after Kara Moen. And Sia's connection to Survivor is Cochran.
Wow.
And then
she followed him on Twitter when his Twitter account blew up.
Right. And then Cochran, I think, made the introduction of Sia to Probst. And then Probst goes, Sia watches Survivor at Probst's house sometimes. And so she's really into the show. She actually has an idea, much like Tyler Perry, for an upcoming season of Survivor. This is not a joke.
Oh, no.
That she feels like, and Emily, your wife might appreciate this, that why are the chickens loose at the start of the season? That they're scared because they're running around. Sia has requested that the chickens, look, she understands if they're going to, people are going to eat them, but why do they have to be scared at the start of the season? So they're going to be in cages to start. At the start of the season. And that's so they're going to make that change on Sia's request.
Okay.
But also, so the other really the crazy thing is, so that Cochran, who famously does, he has a car, but he doesn't drive.
Right. I've heard this.
Jeff Probst picks him up and drives him to the reunion show.
What? Oh my God, to be a fly on the window of that car.
And I kind of get it. Like, maybe Jeff is like, what are the things you think I should hit? Like, what do you think people want to know?
Yeah, and Cochran's a writer, you know? So, like, he's a good person to bounce ideas off of.
It's just so weird. Like, what? Cochran gets, or you think that Jeff is really busy that day.
Wow.
You think you wouldn't have time to go pick up Cochran and drive him to the, if anything, you would think if it would be the other way around, that Cochran would pick up Jeff and then drive him to the finale.
Yeah, because I only, when I think of Jeff Probst in cars, I can only imagine him riding shotgun.
Seems really weird.
Or like sitting on the tailgate as the car is driving really fast, yeah, and dangerously.
And then after the show, you know, Jeff has to drive Cochran home.
You don't think he makes him take a lift?
No.
Like, this is a
that was the
trip,
whole
buddy.
Story, was yeah. that he picks up Cochran and wow. drives.
Round drives trip. Round
get in
trip.
The backseat and let me drive.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. Wow. I really would, you know, if Probst ever decides to play the game, I think it'd be a really great way to do it. It'd be like some sort of Probst and Cochran season. I think like that would be really fun to see.
So we've talked a lot about the finale and the reunion show. Let's get into some of the actual questions. Let's dig into some of this meet Joe style.
Let's do it.
Did get to talk with Joe last night as well. A very nice guy.
Yeah, I didn't get to see him, but sounds like he's, you know, living up to the legend. Mr.
Yeah,
Joe.
To Joe and his son. For a little bit. Okay. Here's a question from our own Brent Walgamont, who wants to know about the mindset of some of the jurors.
Hey, Rob, this is Brent Walgamont, and I have a question about the travesty that was the Survivor finale last night. Okay. True or false? Jason and Scott were never going to vote for Ty because they got by him. They were never going to vote for Aubrey because they got by her. They didn't get got by Michelle, and so they were like, we'll award you $1 million. True or false?
Josh, in your travels, have you had any time to think about the Jason and Scott jury vote?
Yeah, I think Brent's probably not far off. I would imagine that that's pretty close to true.
Yeah.
I think that Jason, based on their exit interviews and stuff now, and like reading what they say about the game today, it sounds like, and I got it from Julia as well, a lot of people saying, and it now in context makes sense, is like Aubrey is killing it out there, didn't really appreciate it at the time, was what Julia had said to me, and like Jason was complimentary towards Aubrey then. I think in the moment, and this is one of the things about Survivor, is you're voting as a juror so close to having been voted out yourself, that you're understandably going to be raw and you're going to feel bitterness and you're going to feel hurt. And, you know, part of the winner's job is to heal those wounds, or at least dull those wounds enough so that they can see that you are the person that they ought to be voting for. So I think that if you want to, you know, assign blame on Aubrey for not being able to do a good enough job at that, I think that that's not unfair. But I think also it's probably not unfair to imagine that Jason and Scott, just, you know, who we saw as stubborn individuals out there quite often, would have dug their heels in and come up with an idea, and we're going to do this thing and we're not going to be shaken from it. And this thing is, we're going to vote for Michelle no matter what. I could absolutely see that.
You know, the secret scenes from this week are kind of illuminating in terms of this, because when Sydney comes back, did you watch her Ponderosa video at all?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so she comes back from Ponderosa, and if you haven't watched this, so Jason, Scott, and Julia aren't talking to Sydney when she gets back because they're still mad at her from the game. So they're just going to freeze her out. They're just right. not going to associate with her, which I thought was surprising, because in the game, it seemed like Sydney and Jason had, you know, mended fences, and Sydney even said that, oh, I know I'm good with Jason because we cleared things up in the game. So she talks a lot about how when Jason and Scott are together, there are certain ways, you know, they're both like individually fine, but you get them together. She says that they're like, you know, these high school mean girls, basically, and says that they're very clicky when it comes to that. Interestingly, also, if you watch the what each juror is thinking for Jason and Scott, I mean, Jason is particularly harsh on Aubrey's game. He basically says that she was a terrible player. She had no strategy out there, which is different than, you know, what he's said as he's come
like
to watch
the show. 3 days earlier, yeah. Well, also, what he was saying out in the game.
Yeah.
You know, during the game, him and Scott are both saying there's so much brawn in Aubrey. And, like, you know, they're really complimentary.
Well, that was before she worked on the plan to ultimately, like, that was going into that Nick vote, I think.
Is it then? Is it not before the Debbie or Scott vote? I don't know. Timing, whatever. But they did say that. They were complimentary toward her inside of the game. Granted, that's days and days earlier. But that's a real about face for Jason to be saying she has no strategy and no value as a winner.
Yeah, and was really a bad player. So, you know, it's very hard to reconcile. How much of that blame do we assign to Aubrey of not doing a good job of painting that picture for the jury? And how much do we blame on the jurors themselves for being really close-minded about this?
Right.
And I mean, I tend to side more on blaming the jurors for that, but I'm definitely open to exploring that topic.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It really is because, you know, the whole bitter jury conversation, you know, it's such a hot button topic when it comes to Survivor. And a lot of people really, truly believe there's no such thing as a bitter jury. Then there's the other school of thought, which I am more of a mind in, which is, of course, there's bitter juries, but that's part of the game. Like the jury, by extension of your actions, is oftentimes going to grow very, very bitter. And now your job is to handle it. But what's interesting for this conversation, I think, and I don't know that we're going to come to any kind of resolution on it today, is for my money, this is one of the first times for me that I'm thinking, like, did a jury get it wrong? You know, can a jury get it wrong in the first place as an argument? But did two or three of these people just very steadfastly decided that we are going to refuse to listen or look at this person's actual game and we are just going to vote the way that we want to vote? I don't have an answer on it, but I do think it's something that's going to be talked about and considered when it comes to this season for a very long time. Did the co-wrong jury get it wrong?
I did talk to Jason briefly last night, and I did talk about this, and I said that, you know, I kind of feel like did you get the vote right? And
wow, yeah.
I want to paraphrase, he was saying in my mind that he definitely was not 100% convinced that that was the right call to make.
Yeah,
I did not talk to Scott. I haven't heard from Scott, so I don't know how much those guys are sort of saying a little bit like, hey, mea culpa.
Right.
Aubrey did a great job. I had no idea. We might have gotten this one wrong. So I don't know if they are standing by the things that they were saying leading up to that vote.
In the moment, they voted the way they wanted to vote. And
so did Julia, too.
So did Julia. But then the other equation is, like, you have to look at who else voted for Michelle. Sydney voted for Michelle.
Yeah.
Debbie voted for Michelle. So it's not like to throw it completely on to Scott and Jason and Julia isn't right, especially because I don't think those three people have any sort of sway over Debbie Wanner. You know, like, I don't think that Debbie or even Sydney, these don't strike me as people who are influenced by other people's arguments. They march to the beat of their own drummer, and their drummer told them to vote for Michelle.
Right. I think what annoys me about it is if you want to come in and say Sydney's like, you know what, in my mind, it was 51-49 Michelle. Okay, I can see that, you know, it was close. But when you come out and say, Aubrey was terrible, Michelle was amazing, like, well, that seems like, I don't know, you know, how you're scoring this match, because it doesn't, if you want to say it's close, okay, toss up, fine. But when you say that one person was really, really bad when they weren't, that sort of, you know, makes me throw out that opinion.
And there's so much that you don't see on the show that happens out there because it's, you know, a 55-minute episode that's covering 3 days of action every week. But, like, it's hard for me to see, like, what were the nightmarish things that Aubrey must have been doing to warrant that description. And I just can't picture it. I just can't picture, like, I can certainly picture that she comes off better on television than she did out there in person, watching her play the game and playing the game alongside her. But I can't imagine that there was anything disastrous.
I want to ask you about a specific point that I think I haven't heard this brought up in too many conversations about this season and Aubrey's game. I want to go back to the Peter vote.
Okay.
Just how damning did that Peter vote turn out to be for Aubrey, where she wrote down Julia's name and then crossed it off and wrote Peter? It was a great TV moment for us at home. But I really feel like that's a big turning point in the game, in that for her, she ends up making sort of a sworn enemy out of both Julia and Scott. And those turn out to be two of the people who go to the jury and are really sort of really, like, you know, stoking the flames that Aubrey sucks in the game. She never bounces back from that with those players.
That's a really great point. And, you know, we talked about that at the time of, like, you know, if you're going to do it, if you're going to vote for Julia, just, you know, or if you're going to vote for Pete, just vote Pete outright. Or, you know, don't, you know, tear up that parchment, pick up another piece of parchment paper and rewrite your vote. And I do think that clearly with the Julia thing, at the very least, hadn't really considered how much of an impact that it had on Scott. But obviously he was very vocal about it in the aftermath of the Pete vote. But Julia has talked about how things between her and Aubrey were very tense from that moment forward. Mm-hmm. And clearly she needed those votes in the end. And, you know, it's the butterfly effect. You change one thing, how does everything else change? If she just cleanly votes out Pete, how much does her relationship with Julia and Scott change? Fascinating.
And I think maybe it highlights an indecisiveness, which maybe could be read as wishy-washiness or weakness by those jurors. But I think that that was a pretty big moment in the game in terms of how she was perceived by those people that were involved with that vote.
Totally. And I think, you know, listen, I'm certainly not coming out here and saying that Aubrey Bracco is a perfect Survivor player. I think there are very few, if any, perfect Survivor players outside of my Khaleesi, Kim Sprodlin, who is not even a perfect Survivor player. And I think she's pretty darn close. But I think with Aubrey, who is very, very good, in my opinion, who's, you know, borderline great at Survivor, I think that there are moments for Aubrey that are not so flattering, that are not so fantastic. And I think that that was one that we definitely highlighted at the time, a lot around that moment, in fact. Not just the way that she voted out Pete by first voting for Julia, but the way that she was engaging those conversations and being really business about those conversations when they were coming to her and floating out the idea of voting for Pete. And she was really kind of, it seemed like emotionally closed to it. And I think that, you know, the argument right now is the social player just beat the strategic player, at least that's how it's being framed. And I think if you want to dig back a little bit into the history books on this season, you certainly have early precedent for Aubrey's social game not being as strong as what we end up seeing from Michelle, maybe, which is ironic or interesting, at least being that Aubrey is the person who talks about emotional intelligence right around the time that they are turning on Pete and Liz Markham. So, yeah, I think that there's an arc there for sure to track.
An Arkham? In addition to that, I also wanted to ask you something else I was thinking about. The tie vote against Scott, where they end up burning Scott with the super idol at that point in time. Is it possible, Josh, that there could be, we talk about, like, oh, making big moves, but are there some moves in the game that are so big and hurt so badly that the person you do that move to will never forgive you and will definitely vote against you? And is that a case to not make that move? So, for instance, like in this season, we had the tie decides to not use the super idol on Jason. Jason and Scott feel like that they are indestructible and they sort of, you know, shoot the missile into the Death Star. And they feel like that they have this great plan. It's foolproof. And not only do they knock Scott out, they also take out Jason's idol. In hindsight, is it possible? Like, is that a move that if you do make that move, it's so scorched earth that there's no coming back from it. Is it almost motivation to not make that particular move?
But you got to get them out eventually anyway. And the way that they are framing their power, that they have this super idol, that they have this unstoppable thing that you can't get past them and you'll never be able to touch us. Vote for us. We will knock one of you out instantly. And you talk about scorched earth. They're pouring out the fire. they are hiding tools around camp. They started it, you know? And it comes down to this is their reaction to having one of their kind of loose allies, someone that they were probably going to burn themselves at some point in Nick. That guy gets voted out, and then they're so sour and salty that they start doing the whole Operation Sabotage thing. I think when they start playing with that level of firepower, I think the only response is equal firepower, at least from a strategic level. Mm-hmm. And then maybe ultimately don't be surprised that the people who very whimsically fired off nuclear weapons are going to be nuclear at Final Tribal Council. I just don't know how you defuse that bomb because you have to take that bomb out of the equation.
Well, two things. One, and again, we're just talking about stuff. I'm not advocating at any point that Aubrey and Ty shouldn't have gotten rid of them. So a couple of things. One, I wonder if this speaks more to the context of maybe they should have split the votes, because if you were to disarm Jason and Scott under conventional methods, they might tip their caps. They say, like, hey, that was a good move. But the way that Scott and Jason were embarrassed also by the way that Ty did not use the super idol on him, and Jason also lost his idol, I bet that made them feel dumb in addition to. So it was like insult and injury to them. And I wonder if that was something, you know, they could have never gotten over. And if that is the case, if that is the way that you have to proceed, maybe you have to take Jason to the end, because now you have these two guys who are going to rally the troops against you as opposed to just the one. And if you know that they are so much worse together than they are apart, like, so what if Jason gets to the end and then Scott's like, Jason's the greatest guy ever. Like, you, everybody else sucks. It's like, okay, so if he gets that one vote, is that potentially a better case scenario than having them both together sort of like, okay, now Julia is feeling like, okay, well, now these guys are going to be mad if I don't, you know, go along with what they're doing. And now all of a sudden that's three votes together.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, there's something to the idea that if you have like a toxic pair, if you have people who are really, really brash and are very, very steadfast, and especially are that way when combined, you know, much like a super idol becomes so powerful when you put two idols together and becomes this unstoppable force of nature, you might want to keep those things separate. But what's the road to that? Because then it becomes so clear to everybody, all right, like, what is the conversation? What is the open dialogue about this? Like, all right, we all agree that Jason has one of those final three spots. Like, So now everybody else, you know, we're fighting it out for two spots. So I just don't know how that plays out. But I think that there's something interesting to the idea of when you encounter a situation like that on Survivor, when you are faced with a really powerful pair of people, you typically want to split that powerful pair up, but you really maybe want to keep them separate if they are potential jury poison. That's a layer of the game that I haven't quite considered. But in terms of the way that they blindside Scott and Jason, with, you know, the embarrassment and everything that you bring up, like, there's probably no better way to do it, though, if you want to have the ultimate desired effect of knocking one of them out of the game and making sure that their idol is gone. Like, yeah, it's embarrassing, but what's the better alternative to, like, go up to them and say, hey, Ty's with us now. He's not going to play his idol with you guys. Really sorry about that. Then an idol just gets played.
I think that you would have had to have done the move that they were trying to do at the final nine, I believe, when they're going to split the votes against them and try to flush one of their idols and sort of take it out that way. But, you know, that just wasn't really in the cards based on Julia not wanting to do that.
Yeah.
Let's take another question and let's look at the other side of the bitter jury. This is from Humby, Umberto.
Hey, guys, Umberto here. So I'm calling because I'm a little upset. I see a lot of people saying that there was a bitter jury and that Aubrey was rough. And I just don't think so. And I'm seeing that these are the same people that said that Natalie Wise should have won against Russell. And I don't think you can have your cake and eat it too. It's not fair. The same reason why Russell lost is the same reason why Avery lost. They just weren't able to gather the votes from the jury. It's a social game before a strategic game. Can we just make sure that people know this? Survivor is a social experiment, not a strategic one.
Okay. Humbie brings some interesting food for thought. So just I want to try to map this of who's on which side of the debate. So for the most part, Josh, and I know that this is not a one-for-one,
yeah.
You feel like the people who argue Natalie should be the right winner over Russell, whose side are they on? They're also, that by proxy, are also saying Michelle should have won over Aubrey?
I don't think it's because I think that these are two very closely related situations. They are, you know, first cousins, basically, you know, they are really, really close, but I don't know that it's a one for one like that. I don't know. I think that the Russell and Natalie thing, there are, you know, the Russell purists, the people like Russell definitely played the better game. That jury was bitter. They should have voted correctly. They voted incorrectly. And I think a lot of people over the years have really turned against that, at least in like sort of, you know, online Survivor fandom. It's like, no, Natalie won. Natalie won fair and square. You and I talked about this at length during the Samoa chapter in Evolution of Strategy, which was one of my favorite chats throughout the entire audiobook. What's interesting for me is, like, I do think that a lot of those proponents, the people who are like, Natalie got it, Natalie deserved it, I think a lot of those people are today and maybe in the days ahead are the same people who are going to now be saying, but Aubrey just got robbed. So I think that that's why I mean that this is, you know, sort of a really interesting historical moment for Survivor, that I think that there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance right now about it that's not easy to clear up.
So how do we reconcile this?
I don't know. I don't have any answers for you on that.
Yeah.
Because
the Russell thing,
go to your shrink,
is easy because we say, okay, well, Russell antagonized people as he sent them out of the game. It wasn't so much like that he was blindsiding them. It was a lot of the people from Galoo sort of turning on one another as sort of like the dominoes started to fall. But Russell sort of like made them feel dumb as they went out the game.
Right.
Aubrey did not do that. She didn't make people feel stupid outside of, you know, if Jason and Scott feel dumb because of what happened with the idol when Ty ended up flipping and not wanting to use it on them. So,
but that counts, you know.
Yeah. One of the things,
it's not malicious, but, you know, intention and, you know, action, like the way that something is received, intention, reception, or, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that was brought up, Aubrey said in her exit interview with me that she had seen a video where Jason is talking about how, Aubrey shouldn't be there anyway because she should have gone home when it was the Neil medevac. That was a reason why people didn't want to vote for her.
But
yeah,
that's very thin. That's well, very thin. I mean, this game is called Survivor. You survive votes. You survive cycles. You survive rounds and you progress. And I don't think that you should be blamed for surviving the game when you were being targeted. Granted, it's not like anything from her own steam, but that's a strike against her. That's a bizarre argument, to say the least.
Yeah.
Bizarre. Very strange.
Yeah. So
I think I think one of the things about this particular situation, and by and large, I agree with Humbie, you know, in terms of looking at Survivor at large. But I think, you know, we're so close to this one still right now, so it's really tough to completely unpack. But I think, you know, a lot of these arguments against Aubrey, as you pointed out, that some of them just kind of don't hold water.
Mm hmm.
And yeah. I think that that's the thing, is like, it seems a little more open and shut in terms of like, Russell really offended people and, you know, played in a way that was like socially repulsive. Whereas Aubrey, maybe her social game is not as strong as Michelle's, but I don't think that you would say that like anything she did like really just like scorched the earth, at least from a viewer's perspective.
Yeah.
But clearly it did for some of these people.
But that being said, even if we want to say, okay, Jason and Scott, those guys were really bitter about what happened, still, Aubrey was not able to get the Debbie vote. She wasn't able to get the Sydney
exactly.
vote. We see in the Sydney Ponderosa video that Jason and Scott aren't even talking to her. There's no reason to believe that those guys had any influence on the way that Sydney is voting. So while we can say, boy, it sucks that it seems like these guys were bitter, we also have to deal with the reality in that there was something that made five different people, for various reasons, all vote in Michelle's favor. So it's I think, too easy to say, okay, bitter jury. Michelle did enough good things that people are willing to vote for her as the winner of the season.
Yeah.
Let's keep going, and let's take a question from Van. Van from Tempe in Arizona has a question for Josh.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Rob and Josh. This is Van calling from Tempe. So, Josh, I know you talk a lot on the Wiggle Room about the stories of the season. So what's the biggest story that we're going to remember from Koh Rang? Is it Michelle winning, Aubrey losing, Ty just being a part of the season, or the fact that we set a record number of medevacs? I'd love to hear your thoughts, and thank you guys for an awesome season of podcasting. Thanks.
Josh, have you given any thought to this as sort of like the 30,000-foot view of what is the story of Koh Rang?
Well, hopefully it will always hold the distinction of most medevacs. hopefully that never changes because that would mean some bad stuff is coming our way in the future. So let's just hope that this has that distinction forever. But I think that that was really the narrative going into the season. The narrative going into the season was this is going to be the hardest season physically. You know, in an early interview that I did with Jeff before the season started, and we were kind of talking about how second chances for him was really, you know, one of the most strategically complicated seasons of the series ever. I kind of threw at him as like, so is this upcoming season sort of like the yin to its yang, where this is like really emphasizing, you know, emphasizing not the headier aspects of Survivor, but more like the physical, brutal aspects of the show. He's like, yeah, I think that that's a good way of looking at it. And I think that that was a lot of what we were hearing about the season. And I think that all of that still holds up. I think that you'd really have to like sit down and really figure out like, was this the most brutal season of Survivor? I think that, you know, depending on what you value,
I don't think
as
it was
brutality. Yeah. And I think that it's not necessarily the case. It's certainly the one with the most medevacs. It certainly looked really hot, really painful. But I don't think that that will be what this season is remembered for. I think what this season was becoming along the experience of watching it was a really surprising delight, you know, that this season was really so much better than a lot of people were coming into it thinking. That it was really, I thought, beautifully told. I thought that the story was just like really excellently conveyed. I think that, you know, the confessional choices that were thrown in there, we got some real gems along the way. Lots of emphasis on character moments, really kind of an old school feeling season. No idols played. I think all of that is great. But I think that at least, I don't know about the 30,000 foot view, but I do think that at least for the next few months before we have another season of Survivor to talk about, I do think that what we will remember the most is this conversation about Michelle winning and Aubrey losing. I think at least certainly today, I think that that's the conversation. I hope that when we are miles and miles away from it, we are looking back at the season and remembering that this was a really exciting, surprising season that shows 32 seasons into Survivor that this thing really still has the juice. That's my takeaway from it ultimately. But I think that, you know, just for the near term, short term, at least if not longer term, I think that one of the big questions is going to be this conversation about how did Michelle win and how did Aubrey lose?
Let's take another question. This is from Anna, not Kate, in Seattle.
Hey, Rob and Josh, it's Anna from Seattle. I was wondering if you guys have an opinion about the tiebreak rules at Final Four. In every other vote, the survivors are discouraged from forcing a tie because they could then be vulnerable during the rock draw. However, in a Final Four, there's no reason not to force a tie. If there was a drawback to forcing a tie, Ty would likely have voted for Aubrey, potentially causing a much different outcome to the game. What do you guys think? Is there a better way to handle the situation? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. I've gotten this question from a couple different people, Josh, about the fire making at the Final Four. This is the second time in the last three seasons that we're seeing this done. Do you like it? Do you get excited for a fire making Final Four challenge?
Yeah, I do. I like that. I think that, you know, and I like it actually as sort of a strategic utility. Maybe less so this season, but more so with Mike Holloway in Worlds Apart and forcing that tie against Rodney and Carolyn. And you are kind of forcing these two people to put on a show for the jury. So you're giving the jury some entertainment. You are showing the weakness potentially of Rodney and Carolyn because neither of them are especially good at making fire. I think that those are, you know, I think those are great things to bring with you into a final three. So I actually like the strategic utility. And then just on an entertainment level, I think it's exciting. And, you know, you do hear like fire represents your life out here. I like seeing that in the final stage of the game. I think that, yeah, I like it. What do you think?
I don't have a strong feeling on it. I always feel like that's sort of like a weak argument of, okay, I want to give these people an opportunity to make them look bad because they can't make the fire. I think you're just putting so much, leaving so much to chance. I mean, what happens if they just nail it? And, you know, I think that's just sort of, I don't know necessarily about the strategic benefit. Can we just take a look at what, if it was the old rules, if it was the Vesepia rules, if it was the Pappy right. Purple Rock rules, so how would this have played out?
Well, I don't think that anyone would go for it. You know, I think that it would not happen. And I think that you just get Aubrey voted out here. I don't think even Ty is, you know, wild enough to go for a rock draw at the final four.
So it turned into that if there was a 2-2 tie, we would be forced to, not Michelle, because she has the immunity necklace, the other three people have to draw a rock in that spot. So ultimately, Ty would just switch his vote over and Aubrey would get voted out in that spot. And so,
or he'd get pappied.
Yeah, I guess so.
He would get pappied.
I guess this is better. I guess it results on like people just like not saying like, okay, well, let's just go with the easy thing. So. Yeah, I don't mind. Exciting. I just don't get like it's yeah. not like when the fire making challenge is happening that I'm like, you know, oh my God, this is my favorite thing in the world to watch people.
Look,
make
if it happened, if it starts to happen every season, then maybe let's think about, you know, fixing things. It has happened twice recently now, yeah. but like it doesn't happen every season. You know, how often has it happened?
No, it's just super boring when they can't get the fire going. Like, I know that, like, you know, people want to tweet about, like, oh, it's like Becky and Sundra.
Right.
But it's still really boring when it's happening.
Well, the Becky and Sundra one is so iconic. So it's like, for that one, it's like, I'm so glad that it happened, but I don't want it to happen again. You know, like, I don't want to have to live through that again. And I think that this one that we saw with this season wasn't remarkable. Especially because Sydney was never really in the fight. The moments with Aubrey were dramatic, but you know the fact that Sydney was never really in it was kind of, you know, shrug your shoulders a little bit. But
I'd be fine with rock, paper, scissor at, you know, just 2-2 tie. Okay, best 2 out of 3, rock, paper, scissor. I think that would be just as dramatic for me than making the fire.
Or like standing on a pole or something.
Yeah, well, let's not get carried away. That's not that fun. But in terms of just like, okay, let's just like move it along here.
All right. Well, yeah. Well, you're really all about that.
Okay.
You love those yada yadas.
Yada yada. That's a, you know, yeah. Really, like flip a coin on some of these challenges. All right. let's keep going. Let's check in with our buddy, the tabulator, Kurt Clark.
Awesome.
Hey guys, Kurt from Chicago here. Quick question for you. I was wondering if you were as surprised as I was that Neil didn't play his hidden immunity idol at the penultimate tribal council before Jeff read Michelle's vote. I mean, he had to have a sense he was quite likely to be par hard here at this vote. Anyway, that's another season under wraps. Great job, Rob, all season long, and thanks for the coverage. Take care. Bye.
Are you kind of surprised Neil didn't have the hidden immunity idol on his person there?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a fun. Who knows? It could have happened, you know. Like, and then they were just like, "No, stop that! Stop that, Neil! This is not happening. This is a serious TV moment." I think also though. You got to imagine that Neil, in his mind, in that moment, is pretty
incensed.
Yeah, is pretty ticked off in that moment. I don't know that he's really thinking about making jokes, except for that, you know, final shot that he takes at Michelle on his way out the door.
He said to her, you thought you were a badass bitch, but yeah. were more like a cute little puppy still suckling at the teat.
Yeah.
I don't think you stand a chance. I mean... it's such a weird line. Like, is he serious? Is he being like fake mean? What is that?
So he tweeted about this actually and says that the BAB is in reference to Michelle's audition video for Survivor, which Nick in his exit interview with me had already said was online. You could find it on like Survivor Reddit or Survivor Sucks or something like that. And in the video, Michelle refers to herself as a BAB. And both Nick and I guess Neil as well had seen that video. So Neil claims that it is a reference to the video that she made coming into the season.
I just don't get what he's going for there. Is he being like tongue in cheek when he's saying that, or is he being like really serious about when he says that to her?
I think it's probably, it's a reference, but I think it's also like, oh, I'm mad. You just voted me off the jury and I don't like that or you very much right now.
But it's like mad whispering that he did. Like, I feel like that's
it's because Neil's kind of a whisperer. It's just the way he talks. It's a little bit of a whisperer. It's a quiet voice.
It's like an inside voice.
So help me God, if I have to stop this car right now, we are going home right now. We are going home.
The whisper voice is a thing. It's a real thing. It's probably, you're not going to listen to the Whisper Voice podcast too often, but it's the way he happens to speak.
All right, let's keep moving.
I thought it was great. That was very funny.
Keep moving along. This is from our buddy Chad Shepard.
Wiggler, the bard to which I bow. Chad Shepard here. I too am a Thai guy. His soul sings. How loco is it the early narrative was if he made it to the end, he'd win it. He didn't get a vote. I'm singing sorrow, Wiggler.
So how crazy is it that Ty's story ended up being that he ends up being a zero vote goat at the end? Because if you would have told us that like 8 weeks ago, we would not have believed it.
Yeah, no, totally. It's the thing is, I think that Steven really touched on this both on his blog and in the know-it-alls with you, that like it's a real disadvantage that, English is not Ty's primary language. And I think that you really need to be eloquent, or it certainly helps to be eloquent at that final tribal council so that you can really make your case. And if Ty can make that case, if he can really artfully articulate it to these people who would be receptive to it, I think that his resume was great. He did a lot of great stuff along the way. I saw somebody the other day on one of the comment sections saying that like Ty made no decisions. And I don't think that that's true at all. Ty made many decisions, maybe decisions he couldn't explain very well, but he made a lot of decisions. I'm not surprised as of, three or four episodes ago that Ty is in the final three and draws no votes. I think that, starting with the Scott thing, he's the real agent of chaos in that moment. And I think that it's going to be hard for him to rebound with Jason and Scott. So real no
shot. Hard to rebound against Scott under any circumstances.
For anybody. Not even Nick really could do it. I think that that's just going to be tough for him. But I think at the start of the season, you would think that like this is the guy that you put him in the end and it's just slam dunk. He's got it because he's like the most lovable person on the planet.
So many basketball references.
I know. Look at me sportsing.
But did Ty sort of make his own bed this season in that he had to have known... I mean, he's in this alliance with Scott, and maybe he doesn't see Jason and Scott together, but at the point where these guys start to get together, I mean, he sticks with them for a little bit of a while. I mean, he does vote against Jason at the Nick vote, and that sort of goes sort of unmentioned the rest of the season, which is weird. But if he sort of would have stuck with the brains... And like at the point where Debbie is saying like, hey, Ty, you're with us now.
You're in the alliance.
You're in the alliance. Yeah. Like if he would have stayed by Aubrey, I guess he felt like the numbers were going away from them. But then he didn't get back on the boat fast enough. Like he stuck with Jason and Scott. I guess it was tempting because they have the super idol. So he sort of like was reluctantly in this alliance that he didn't belong in, which forced him to be painted as a backstabber. And then he ultimately tries to put this hit on Michelle, which doesn't end up working. So he gets painted as a flip-flopper. So it's tough for Ty. I could see him in a role where he doesn't end up flip-flopping. I think he just sort of ended up getting painted into a corner this season.
I was thinking about Ty, and a lot of the conversation all season long has been like, we've never seen anyone like Ty. And yet I think that there have also been attempts to like kind of compare Ty's play style to other people's play style. And I know that there was, some talk about, is he Keith Nail-ish at all? Is there a little bit of that going on where he's just like this really lovable character that doesn't understand the game very well? I was thinking, and maybe it's just, if it's a boring conversation, we can just squash it immediately. But is there anything that like, is Ty like a more lovable Abby Maria? Who's like, kind of impulsive, is emotional, makes these moves. And, I think like you get on the wrong side of Ty and then like you're kind of burned. Is there anything to that at all?
That's an interesting point. I do like that. He really needs to have somebody like Abby Maria turns on people faster. And I know, and Ty did entertain turning on Aubrey. He needs somebody that's just going to sort of just like keep him reassured and happy the whole season. And I really feel like that when he lost Beast Mode Cowboy, he was really lost throughout the rest of the season. He just didn't have somebody to sort of like keep him sort of on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, stolen kisses and stolen partner, stolen strategy partner.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like Ty would be an interesting case in a return because I don't think that he would have the same journey in a second time out.
Really? You don't think so?
I feel like that Ty, if anything, that he needs like a little bit more of like the Rupert gene. Forgive me for saying it, but I think he just needs to probably not be freelancing as much. I think he's just like, okay, this is my alliance. This is what I'm doing. I almost feel like getting involved with the idol, getting involved in the advantage. I feel like that those things are a disadvantage to Ty. The best thing about Ty is his work ethic and likability. And I think that the more variables and decisions which you give to him, the more rope he has to hang himself with. So I think that if he was just a number in an alliance, if people treated him as sort of like a Rancher Rick, where he was just like the old reliable, I think that he would be somebody who I think could have a good shot to win. But at the point that he starts trying to play a complicated game, he's a bad liar. He can't keep secrets. Like it's a bad look for him. He needs to focus on his strengths. Which are really just being a likable person that everybody loves being around.
I think that's really interesting. And I don't know if you have a voicemail about it or if it's anything you wanted to dig into, but like, what's the legacy of Michelle's win for future players? You know, what are the lessons to be learned from her? You know, we saw in the previous Brains, Brawn, and Beauty, a guy like Tony Vlachos win with this really wild balls to the wall way of playing. And I think you see shades of that, you know, echoes of that in Natalie's game and in Mike's game, people who are just really, you know, pedal to the metal. And that's kind of been the way a lot of people have been playing Survivor since then. And I think if you look at Michelle now, is she somebody that people should be modeling their game after? And Ty is a really good example of that. Ty, who is playing, you know, his version of an Aubrey game this season, you know, that their journeys are really linked together. Does it behoove him more to play the Michelle game, which obviously worked, which is just to be, you know, keep your head down, be really social, be really valuable around camp. As you say, be a number. And, you know, if you have to make a move, do it selectively, do it unoffensively. Is there something to be taken away from the way that Michelle is playing that you think that we would see in future seasons?
I just think that it's a reminder of the counterpoint. I think we are watching Survivor in the big move era. You got to make big moves. You got to make big moves. I think it's just a good reminder that you don't always have to be the person who's making the big moves to be the winner of this show. I was saying with Steven last night, I think that we've actually been pretty spoiled over the last couple of years of that the winners that we've had in this game have all been players trying to take these big swings at that between Jeremy, Mike, Natalie, Tony, Tyson, Cochran even. I feel like that Denise is probably the last sort of understated winner that we've had. And that was, what, 6 seasons ago. So I think that we've been very accustomed to winners playing sort of a bigger, more aggressive game. And I think it's just a good reminder of like, maybe the paradigm isn't completely shifted to what it takes to win the game. You don't always have to be making the biggest of moves. Sometimes the smaller move can still win you the game.
Yeah. Except if you're playing on Survivor Big Moves, in which case everybody has to be making big moves.
Yeah. This is a question that it's not a formal question that we got, but from Jim Rosario, emailed me and wanted to know if we had any ideas on how to improve the reunion show. Is there a workshop that we could do real quick of what do they need to do on the reunion show? I know a lot of people are really worked up, not enough questions for the audience. It did feel wonky last night. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, don't invite Sia.
Yeah. I don't know what they planned of if they had a segment with her and she just couldn't wait. It didn't
I don't know what
odd.
The yeah. I don't know what they had planned with her, but I really do believe Jeff when he says this is not a bit. Well, obviously it becomes a bit, but it was not planned. I really don't think it was. I think it derailed the reunion. I think it leached a lot of screen time, obviously, and unfortunately, segments were probably cut. That's probably why we don't check in with Sydney. I bet that we would have checked in with Sydney otherwise. So I don't know. I think that this reunion is an outlier. The reunion is never the best part about a season of Survivor. You know, when you're doing your rewatches, a lot of people often just don't even watch the reunion. I don't know if there's, you know, one thing to like jazz it up, maybe have America's Tribal Council being set up for the following week. I don't know. But I think that this past one, this Koh Rong reunion went wrong. And I think it's really as simple as that. I think that it just like kind of exploded. I think it's sort of a glorious way in retrospect, but I haven't gone back and watched it yet.
What about in terms of like the setup? Well, we've had basically this same setup now for 32 seasons, with the exception of in Karamoan when we had the pre-jury people sit in the audience. Is there anything to sort of like, is that what you want? Just sort of like the bleachers with the entire cast over there? Is there anything to sort of like, I feel like when I used to watch the Jersey Shore, they'd have everybody there, but then they'd like bring, it was like a little bit more of like a talk show setup where they would bring like, okay, let's talk to JWoww and Snooki now and bring them sort of in the chairs and sort of in the hot seat. But that seems like that's probably not as practical, too much moving around. I don't know. I don't really know what you could do, but I feel like that what Survivor does seem to get away from is that we spend 14 weeks watching these people on the show. Like, I think it's okay to just talk to these people. I said this last night also, I feel like that Jeff is just like, he seems so frantic that people are going to change the channel during the, where are they going? What else is on right at 10 o'clock?
Yeah, but that being said, I mean, I know that you've talked about this before, certainly in Evolution of Strategy. It's like, why are we talking, you know, do we have to talk to every back row person? You know, like, do we need to check in with everybody? So I don't know. Like, I definitely get your point. I think
not every single person has something to say, but I feel like, could we talk a little bit about why the jury voted the way that they did? And
yeah, those are always fun is when you have those really game focused reunions for sure.
Yeah. And get into a little bit about different things that were going on. I mean, certainly, I certainly can see the counterpoint of, you know, okay, we don't have to get into every single thing. That's not necessarily, you know, most people can't even remember what happened more than 2 weeks ago on the show. But it's almost like, you know, there's certain things we spend a lot of time on, and then we throw out all these other things. So,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't like, it doesn't make me irate. I mean, we spent a lot of time dealing with the, you know, Beast Mode Cowboy and what's going on there. But I just felt like that there were other stories that we could have talked about.
Well, I think it's a few things. I think it was the Sia thing happened, and that really, you know, kind of screwed with timing on stuff, I think. And also, some of the people up there, they talk a lot. Ty does not speak in small sound bites, and neither does the Beast Mode Cowboy. And I think that you could, I don't know if you could sense it watching it on TV, but I felt it in the room. It's like I could tell Jeff being like, you know, thinking about the thing about the clock. And being like, we're running low on time. Please finish the bite. Let's move on to the next point. I want to cover more. I got the sense that Jeff would have liked to have covered more.
Yeah.
So, you know, I you can pin stuff on him and everything. But I think in terms of this one, I think that he would probably agree. I think he would definitely agree that this reunion kind of flew away a little bit, much like Mark the Chicken, just kind of flew away and got out of control.
And last season was really good. I think they did a good job last season. I don't remember a lot of complaints about the one that we were at with Cambodia, right?
No, not really. Well, that was also because they really had to like dig into some, you know, bigger picture game stuff that happened just because it was so complex, especially with that final six thing. It was just nuts.
So I don't think it needs a radical reinvention or anything like that, but maybe just like a little bit of a tweak and maybe have Sia under tighter
See
security.
See you later.
See you later. Right. All right. One more voicemail question. Starting to look forward to Survivor 33. This is from Max in Michigan.
Oh, man. Are you guys pumped up for next season of Survivor? They combined the two universally most loved seasons of Survivor, Survivor Nicaragua, and Survivor Fiji into one awesome season. Next season, they should combine two other seasons. They should have Survivor One Worlds Apart. Oh, wouldn't that be even better?
Okay. All right, so...
Bring back One World. You know I'm in on that. I would love that.
Obviously, that like he's referring season. To that there is a bit of a generation gap in that it's millennials versus Gen Xers, and it's taking place in Fiji, combining the twist from Nicaragua and the location of Survivor Fiji. Josh, are you right. pumped up for millennials versus Gen Xers?
I'm not as mad at it as a bunch of people seem to be. A lot of people do seem to be pretty annoyed with it. And I know a lot of people, you know, I'm 31. I guess technically I'm a millennial. And so there is like a moment of like, I'm a millennial. No. And I know a lot of people that I've talked to are like,
so you don't identify millennial?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of millennials are like, or at least a lot of the millennials I know are like self-loathing millennials. It's like a lot like Zeke seems to be. Like, I'm on Twitter, but I hate Twitter or whatever he said. I think that there's a little bit of that feeling. So I think that there's some idea of like it's going to be a little exhausting to hear like that whole debate played out over the course of a Survivor season. But I don't know, the cast looks really fun. The location looks really, really great. I think that, you know, that being the name of the show without there being like whatever island it's on, you know, I think that maybe the title could have used a little bit of a revamp. Millennials versus Gen X just sound, it feels like a lot. You know, like could it have been Survivor Generations?
Yeah.
Could we have done something like that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Generations apart.
You're right. Like, I'm hoping that it's like one of these things where there's like another name for it, sort of like if they sort of said, okay, next season is Survivor Fans versus Favorites, but then it sort of like became like Survivor Micronesia somewhere along the way. But
isn't that on the logo from the
start?
Yeah,
it looks like it's on the logo from the start.
And I don't think that there's any location on the logo on this one. I know. So, you know, but I'm not going to nitpick it. I'm not going
to
get
mad
at it.
We have to learn how to spell millennials, right? I've already had to look it up. Yeah. Two L's, two
there's
N's.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard like word five to spell. L's. Yeah,
SEO.
It is. Yeah, it's going to be bad for that, for sure. Yeah, and it's just the word count on my, or the letter count, the character count on your tweets and in my headlines is going to be a lot.
Yeah.
But the cast looks fun. You know, I liked what we saw. I'm excited. It's Survivor. It's probably going to be pretty good.
I am looking forward to doing a lot of the GX chop to, do you know have any idea what I'm talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Hey, if you're not down with GX,
okay. I'm a millennial.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So there'll be some real rivalries going on. I'm
in the podcast too, here in the RHAP. Yes. We're going to be split.
It's going to be hot button, hot takes all around. I can't wait to talk with Gordon Holmes about the All-Star Millennials versus Generation X cast. That's going to be very fun.
Oh, I cannot wait for that podcast.
I can't wait till next spring. You and I do the Survivor Riverlands 3, where we cast all the Generation Xers versus Millennials from Game of Thrones in a Survivor season.
Oh, my God. That's really good. Maybe that's going to be our Walking Dead San Juan del Terminus sequel coming up in the fall.
Wow. All the millennials are on Fear the Walking Dead, unfortunately. That's really
no. Why did we have to talk about Fear the Walking Dead?
All right.
Get out of here.
All right. Here's the millennial try. It's Chris, Nick, Alicia. Well,
stop.
Jack.
No one cares. This is worse than when we were talking about Chucky.
All right.
Is Chucky technically Generation X, by the way? I mean, he's been around for a while.
Generation X, according to Wikipedia, are people with birth dates from the early 60s to the early 80s. So, yeah,
Chucky counts, I think. Yeah. Wow. He's going to be one of the first ones out.
Yeah.
Like, you're a Generation X, but you are also a child.
Yeah.
And a piece of plastic, and you're trying to kill everybody.
Also, you ready for the last time this season to get into the Survivor social media?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Can't wait to find out about these Rupert tweets.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than you get from Sia to your favorite charities. Tweets.
Yeah, thank you so much to Ryan Elder, who is producing these all. I mean, really for going strong. Going back to San Juan del Sur has been coming up with these every single week on the show. So thank you so much for another outstanding season of work from the great Ryan Elder.
A new jingle every week? That sounds like hard work.
Yeah. So you can see more about what he's up to.
Gotta be a real crazy person to do that.
Yeah, at Ryan Elder Music. All right, so let's go into the tweets from this season. And boy, it seemed like every single Survivor was live tweeting this episode. Let's start with Sophie, who tweeted out, "I adore Aubrey and want her to win, but this week I'm not sure I'm in the mood for a better version of me to win. Sorry."
Oh man, that was a clean tweet.
Yeah, very clean.
Very clean.
Then Sophie tweeted to Aubrey, IDGI, I'm proud of you regardless. What's IDGI? You're a millennial.
I don't get it.
Oh.
And you are a Gen Xer, so you don't get it.
That's what that is?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Oh man, the millennials are going to have like the worst merge tribe name. It's going to be totally...
I mean, it's already off to a suspect start when Taylor is saying hashtag soul survivor. Taylor, get out of here now.
I mean, age-wise, I am a Gen Xer, but I feel like I live my life like a millennial.
Yeah, that's why you'd be in trouble on that tribe.
On the Gen X tribe, you're in trouble with both tribes.
Yeah, you got to make it to the swap, my friend, because then you can really run stuff. But you got to get there. You got to hope that those Gen Xers aren't going to tribal for a while.
Yeah. Eliza, she was live tweeting the finale. She tweeted, "I would literally cry if I got voted out of the jury." I believe that.
Yeah, I do too, because she would no longer be able to make amazing Eliza Orland's jury face. And that's like her brand.
She was also very upset about the reunion show. A lot of people are very upset on social media. She said, "So are we really not going to hear from 90% of the cast because of stupid Drew Carey and Sia? Boo."
Wow.
Hashtag Survivor finale. Hashtag Survivor.
Kind of amazing. I'm really surprised to hear that Eliza is upset about people from the audience really interjecting their thoughts in the middle of a live show.
Yeah, she does not like that. She doesn't even like that when people in the audience just start talking during the show.
Yeah. You know what? IDGI.
IDGI. Randy Bailey. Randy Bailey, that he was back on Twitter after a short hiatus, that he tweeted, "Mark the chicken was spared because Ty loves all animals, and now Mark is murdering crabs on the beach for sport. The irony." Hashtag RHAP.
Yeah, do you think that they raised a monster? Mm. Because they left, and Mark, with his like, you know, predator animal brain, is gonna be like, "Why did they leave me? I must now fend for myself." And they really did just like make a murderous monster out of this guy.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
All right. My nomination for tweet of the night goes to Jonathan Penner, who was watching the finale, and he tweeted, "Yet again, I guess wrong on the Survivor finale. Congrats to all, and I'll be back on Survivor Moe's versus Larry's versus Shemp's. I'll be a Shemp."
Oh, God.
How does he fit so many characters in? Is really, does he like write is one of these note tweets? That how does he
he's,
do that?
Yeah, he's just very, very artful with his word choice.
Yeah. That
very, very writerly Jonathan Penner.
He's the best at sort of like introducing thought A and then hard pivot to thought B in the same tweet.
He's very good. He's very good. He's pretty good. Man, if he's not on your Gen X versus Millennials all-star cast with Gordon Holmes, I'm going to riot.
I mean, is Penner, is he Gen X?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe he's not.
I mean, what's the cutoff there?
I don't know.
So early 60s to early 80s. Yeah, I guess he's probably, yeah, I mean, I think he's in there.
I think he's in there. I think he's in there.
He's in there.
All right, we got JP.
Yeah.
We got one.
1960s to early 80s. Feel like how early in the 80s?
I don't know. We're getting lost in the woods here.
Yeah,
we can cut him from the cast. It's fine. Let's move on.
But
he's out.
I just feel like that. It seems really like if somebody that's born in 1962 is of the same generation. Something born in like 1983.
Yeah,
feels weird. Seems like that's a little bit off.
I don't know.
Bryce Isaiah, he hates Mark the Chicken. He's so mad.
I know. I know he does.
How the F did Mark make it to Final Tribal? I'm done. Hashtag Survivor.
That's it. That's the breaking point for the Purple Pants badass.
Yes.
He can't.
Out.
He can't anymore. He's out. Mark my words.
Johnny Fairplay was trying to get in on some of that Sia money. He said, so at Sia, I'm pretty nice to people and animals and stuff too. Sia opened a can of worms.
Yeah, I think that you're going to see a lot of survivors tweeting at Sia over the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is the move to just like work your way into Cochrane and sort of like if you could like be friends with Cochrane, then you could hang out with Sia?
Yeah, maybe now. I mean, if you were reading that Probst interview or listened to this podcast and you know that Cochrane is the key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way in. Also, then Jeremy Collins, that he was impressed with Sarge Jason's suit. He said, at Sarge Jason's suit is fire.
It was a good blazer.
Yeah. Although I heard Sydney looked at it and said,
we're in the middle of Korong. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, baby.
She could have used a little more heat.
It turns out
little.
Yeah, she was sitting in front of that that non-fire, and she was like, what, Rob?
And I'm like, brr.
Yeah.
She's cold.
Cold.
Russell Hance, he was worked up tweeting about the show last night. He came away with only one conclusion about the finale. Well, first off, he said, I needed about 4 votes like that for it to work like me. Talking about the vote cancel. Then, after the result came in, he was back rejuvenized. Like I keep saying, there is a flaw in the game. The best player does not win, Jeff Probst.
Wow. You know what's kind of amazing is we went into this season with Kyle Jason talking about how Russell Hance is the only person who's played this game properly.
Yes.
Who has played Survivor the way that it's meant to be played. We are now comparing this final tribal council here with Michelle and Aubrey as being discussed on a similar level as the final tribal council that Russell lost against Natalie. We talked about Kyle Jason as Kylo Jason, trying to live up to the idol of Darth Vader, to live up to the image of Russell Hance Vader. And here he is being potentially a bitter juror.
Mm.
There's something there.
Poetic justice in some way?
I don't know what you want to call it, but there's a thing. There's a thing.
Russell also added, maybe I need to go back and fix the flaw.
Ooh,
how would he
really
do that?
To get back in there, huh?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know, maybe don't spoil a whole season and get in a whole lot of trouble.
He also said, I'm not so sure about the next theme of Survivor. Who in the world is coming up with this S word?
did he actually say the S word?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Okay. It's
nice. He also said, I'm still waiting for Survivor and North Pole.
Survivor and North Pole.
I'm not sure if that's like North Pole versus South Pole he's trying to say, or the Survivor at the North Pole.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who's like really pushing for Survivor to go Arctic.
Yeah, he's a Survivor and North Pole.
Okay.
Not Survivor colon North Pole.
Maybe he's talking about he's waiting for the upcoming Survivor reunion to happen because that will be very close to Christmas.
He added, I'm not saying she played a bad game like Natalie. I'm saying, in my opinion, Aubrey played better.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that Russell believes that for sure. I definitely buy that.
Then he doubled back. What was that stupid theme again?
Yeah. Wasn't he? He went into Survivor Samoa saying he was a millennial there, right?
He also then finally said, what I can't believe is at Jeff Probst / production didn't gather that chicken and bring him up to the U.S. and have him at the live show. Mark was my fave.
I thought that you were going to say Mark was my friend. We got to talk about the very real outcome that Mark is no longer with us. You know, I do think Mark probably died.
Well, did Ty talk to you about what happened to Mark after the show is over?
Well, Jeff was like, oh, we're going to give him to a nice Cambodian family. And Ty was like, he probably was like a really nice Cambodian chicken dinner.
Yeah, I did get to talk with Ty last night briefly Yeah. I told him about how that he is my son Dominic's favorite from the season. Really the only person that Dominic could identify on the show because he has a chicken. And so, not Dominic, he's not allowed to have a chicken. But I was telling Ty about how, you know, my son is really, really likes him. And he's like, oh, what did I tell you what happened with Mark the Chicken? And he said, and then he said, that, like, oh, then production, he lived with them for a while. And then... but I couldn't make out like the very last part of the story. It was a very loud place we were at last night.
Oh man, what if it was Mark lived with production for a while, and then to celebrate two successful seasons in Cambodia, production had Mark for dinner?
Yeah, I think that was sort of the punchline to the story, is that he thinks Mark is not alive anymore.
I don't think Mark is with us. No. I think Mark's probably gone. But he made it through the season, so Rob, you owe me a chicken dinner.
All right, I thought I already owed you the chicken dinner. Damn.
The season had to finish, but now it's confirmed.
Okay. Last couple of tweets. Dale Wentworth at FarmGuy69. He tweeted, kill the effing chicken. Hashtag enough is enough.
Oh my God. Harsh.
Yeah. You thought he hated Muffin. Really hates the chicken. Why is Dale so anti-chicken?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, as a farmer, he's like, these animals are raised to be eaten. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not a farmer.
One guy who's not anti-chicken, Ryan Oprey tweeted, hashtag Mark is no Pelican Pete. But I really like Mark. He's awesome.
How quickly we forget about Pelican Pete.
Yeah. All right. And then we'll try to see if there's anything else that's really knocking our socks off. And that's so many tweets. Final Rupert tweet of the season. He only tweeted once. He said, okay, one tweet. Like, people are begging, Rupert, are you going to tweet tonight, please? All right. You guys have been good. One tweet. We like Sydney to win. She was our choice from the start. She's a badass woman.
Wow.
There you go.
He's not wrong.
Not wrong.
We didn't talk much about Sydney here, which is, I guess,
didn't get a question.
Considering she didn't get a question at the reunion and did not participate in exit interviews outside of the red carpet. But do you have a final take on Sydney Storm?
I think that she was very good. Love to see her come back. I think she was very fun.
I would love to see her come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. I don't think I have a hot good take.
We're in the middle of Korong. Yeah. We don't need no more heat, baby.
Oh, God. I think that on review, going back through this season, is going to be really fun looking at the hints that are there along the way of Sydney's eventual journey toward that fire. I think that there are a few. I think it's got to be great news when Jeff Probst says, at a reunion, we would love to have Sydney back. Like, you got to feel pretty good about that if you're Sydney.
Yeah. You feel good. Can I give you one more tweet? I've got a good Alexis Maxwell tweet.
Oh, of course. I love Alexis.
She tweeted about the new season. Noobs. I love being a millennial. Cool theme. Similar to Fabio's old versus young season. See, I thought that she was making a joke at first, but she seems like she's pretty serious by the end of the tweet.
She's really into it. She loves Nicaragua.
She loves being a millennial.
Yeah. Good for you, Alexis. This is great.
Good.
She'll probably get on the Gordon Holmes season.
I hope so. I hope so. We'll see. Yeah.
I think Angie Cookies Layton is a slam dunk for that season.
Well, twerking is a requirement to be on the Millennial Tribe, right?
It's pretty good. Yeah, I think you want a twerker. I think you want somebody who's going to twerk hard to get it done.
All right. Well, Josh, this is really the end of the proper Survivor podcasting season. Of course, you and I will be together in Reno next week, and I'm sure we'll do some fun stuff there. We're going to have a big podcast that we're going to do live in front of an audience between us, Stephen Fishback, Boston Rob, Tyson, Anna Kate. So that's going to be a jam-packed show that we're going to do. So look for that next week on the podcast. But Josh, if people are feeling very lonely and missing us over the summer, the two of us together on one podcast, you know, there is always the evolution of strategy.
That's right. It's still out there. It still exists. It's real.
Yes, it's real. Of course, the first chapter is completely free if you want to listen to our Borneo chapter at evolutionofstrategy.com, or you can click on the sidebar if you're looking at the website on a computer. But Josh, I just want to give people a little extra incentive. Just like Sia did something charitable for for Ty.
$50,000 off of the evolution of strategy.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to do for the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a promo code SIA where we will take $3 off the first volume of Evolution of Strategy if you want some added incentive to get into it this summer.
Very good. I like that. And I mean, obviously we are biased. We made the thing, but I do think the Evolution of Strategy, I think it holds up pretty well. And the areas where it doesn't hold up are really charming as well. But we had a real fun time recording that. It took us a year and a half to do. It is what, 300 hours long, something insane like
right.
that. So it's going to be a long off season without a lot of Survivor to talk about. So it really is a great time. If you haven't listened to it yet, I do encourage you to do so. Some very fun stuff in there.
Yeah. Listen to the first chapter if you want to give it a try. That's completely free. evolutionofstrategy.com. And if you like it, feel free to move on. You can jump around sort of a Chinese menu and it's like, okay, I like this season. You'll still get it. But if you want to get all of the jokes, better to listen to it all the way through.
I agree.
Yeah, it's always fun, too, when somebody just starts going through it and then is, like, tweeting us at their own pace of how they're going through it, talking about, like, you know, things that we recorded some time ago now. And so it does take you back.
Yeah. Oh, the Johnny DeSilvera tweets are the greatest because he is really trucking through it. And it's really fun to be reminded of, like, stuff that I do not remember saying at all. Takes that were very hot at the time but have cooled in my memory.
All right. Also, then, Josh, what's the hashtag for this podcast?
Oh, man. IDGI?
Hashtag IDGI for I guess that's an appropriate hashtag on if you are an Aubrey fan and you don't get this outcome still, then hashtag IDGI is a very appropriate hashtag.
I think so.
All right. Well, Josh Wigler, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at RoundHoward. Working on so many different things between post-show recaps and covering Game of Thrones and Mr. Robot and all sorts of other things and covering Game of Thrones for The Hollywood Reporter. Josh, anything else you want to tell people to check out besides your parade exit interviews as well?
No, you mentioned all the things that I'm working on right now. I appreciate the plugs.
Yeah, we're going to Reno next week for the big Jason Somerville event. Run it up, Reno. Josh, myself and Stephen Fishback are all flying out together.
Oh, man, that plane better land safely. Otherwise, the podcasting situation here, we're gonna lose all three of us. That's going to be terrible.
Yeah, the know-it-all quotient is way too high. Yeah, we didn't leave anybody behind. So
yeah, we should have had a designated survivor like that new Kiefer Sutherland show that's coming out.
Yeah. Who takes over the know-it-alls in that contingency?
Dominic
and Mike Bloom. Is that what it is?
Dominic and Tyson.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. So much fun covering it this season. Looking forward to reading your comments on robhasawebsite.com. Just because this is the summer hiatus for Survivor does not mean it's a summer hiatus for RHAP. We got plenty more podcasts coming your way, including we will be covering the Survivor Price is Right upcoming next week. I want to try to be on live after that on Monday, plus much, much more. So make sure you stay tuned to the podcast. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.
It's been a long time since the season began, and I'm going to tell you all about how Michelle did win. Aubrey and Ty didn't win, but at least we'll probably get to see them play again. Get to see them play again.
Damn, who knew? Except all the Michelle truthers who saw the edit too. And there she was standing on top, even though she didn't even have to be carried, bro. How could we not talk about Mark the Chicken when Mark the Chicken's all we got? Pretty sure Ty let him go, he ended up in a pot. And now Sia is all distraught.
It's been a long reunion after Michelle did win. And awkward Drew Carey probably doesn't want to appear again. Survivor's come a long way since it began. But now we're in for some douchebag millennials when we see it again. When we see it again.
Joe, show.